Turning now to Iraq and very grim news there. A car bomb exploded near a military recruiting office in Baghdad today. There was a large crowd outside. More than three dozen people were killed in the blast, more than 130 injured in it. This is the worst single terrorist bombing in Iraq since February, when another bomb attack killed 47 people. From President Bush down, there are warnings that Iraq is getting more dangerous as we approach the turnover of sovereignty in less than 2 weeks. Tony Perry is a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's just returned from the war zone. He was embedded with the U.S. Marines in the city of Fallujah. That's the city where four American contractors were killed and mutilated at the end of March. The Marines were subsequently sent in to clean out Fallujah, only to then strike a deal to get security imposed by local Iraqis, including former Ba'athists once loyal to Saddam Hussein. Tony Perry came to our day-to-day studio yesterday. Tell us how that deal came down, because the reports that in the days that that deal was coming down, it was one word coming out of Fallujah. There's another word coming out of Baghdad. It seemed as though the local guys on the scene were putting it together in the way that they wanted it to be. And the command structure in Baghdad wasn't quite sure that they were going to be able to go along with that.
That's true. And the Pentagon was putting out yet another message. It was a Marine Corps idea. They had been given a mission, pacify, if you will, bring stability and security to Fallujah. And at some critical point, the Lieutenant General James Conway, the head of the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, decided that an all-out assault on downtown Fallujah and the resultant casualties that would have occurred was not the way to go. The way to go was to cut a deal, and to cut a deal, frankly, with some of the people who'd been fighting with the Marines for a month.
Did the Marine Corps ever come to understand exactly who they were fighting in Fallujah?
I think they had a rough idea, a pretty good idea. It wasn't monolithic. There were sort of layers of them. Maybe at the bottom level, if you will, was the hothead jihadist who wants a holy war. And then a little bit above him probably was the adventurer from throughout the region. Maybe he's Jordanian, maybe he's Palestinian, maybe he's a Saudi. And then above him, youth with nothing else to do and swayed by the fact that there seemed to be some excitement going on, and he grabbed an AK-47. And then above that, the former Iraqi military people, officers, many of them communications people. And it's with those people that the Marine Corps cut the deal. They, in essence, divided the insurgency by taking the top level, or the top two levels, if you will, out of commission by cutting them a deal, bringing them into the action, and indeed putting them on the American payroll for a while.
What is the situation in Fallujah today? What I read about it is that, first of all, U.S. troops don't have full access to the city, that it's being run more or less autonomously, and that it's a pretty strict Islamic regime.
Fallujah has returned to being what it was, a city of no particular economic, historic, cultural significance in the country. Its significance had been that it was the place in which the U.S. was going head-to-head with the insurgents. I don't see any indication that Fallujah and what happened in Fallujah is impacting anything that's going on in other cities. They have their own situations.
Tony, coming back to this country from your reporting tour in Iraq, what is it, do you think, that we don't get about that story? What is it that we misunderstand about Iraq? If there's something you come back and say, look, there's something I'm not able to get across, or that Americans generally don't understand, what would that be?
It's the Vietnam analogy. Just hangs over everything we do, and it's just a wholly different situation. The U.S. military is different. The conditions on the ground are different. The stakes are different. And we, I think, have trouble getting a clear-eyed view of that region, the stakes, and what could happen over there.
Of course, there have been so many news developments in the last 2 months out of Iraq. I think one would have to say the situation there does not look very good to many people in this country. There is at least the beginning of a let's get out of Iraq now movement.
It's all a political question, and we're going to decide, I suppose, in a rough fashion in November. But it's a thoroughgoing it isn't a tactical question, it's a political question. Progress is being made, slow, painful progress. But that it's all in danger of being overshadowed by the rampant violence, particularly in Baghdad. The sense I have And I was with the 1st Marine Division during the major combat phase last year. And the difference between last year and this year is the sense of tragedy is larger this year. I think last time we had individual tragedies. We had death. We had destruction. But there was a hopefulness that once this is over, things are going to be different. Now I'm afraid the ratio of tragedy to hopefulness has shifted, and the sense of tragedy is much greater. The sense that what could be happening here isn't happening because of the insurgency. Take Fallujah, this nowhere city. American taxpayer has $150 million, $200 million earmarked Fallujah for, you name it, roads, hospitals, clinics, schools, the whole business.
And where's that money going?
Exactly. It's going nowhere so far. You can't get in to evaluate. You can't, you know, get projects going. So Fallujah will get a fraction of the money that would be earmarked for them. So they will be, in 5 years, what they are today, a tumble-down city of no particular distinction that's going, frankly, nowhere.
Did you feel you had any opportunity or chance to get to know Iraqis there, to ask them, look, you cannot want this future of nothing. You must want something better than that. How are you going to get there?
Met a lot of Iraqis, not intimately, not at great length. I was an embedded reporter. I got the Iraqis alone when I could. You're talking about a beaten people. You're talking about a people who have had 30 years of oppression. You're talking about people, everybody knows somebody who was drug off in the middle of the night and never returned. And so when you have people who just want stability and they're willing to trade that for tyranny, it's disheartening, but you understand it. Now, but on the other hand, do not judge by the few people we see, the sort of savages who jump up on cars and celebrate when an American or a Westerner has been killed.
Those are very powerful people, because you see these bombs go off and then you see these people come out in the street. They're not powerful people. They're probably powerless people. But symbolically, when Americans see that on television, they think to themselves,
well, that's the downside of powerful images. You know, it's simultaneous with that, there are probably any number of good things going on, schools that are being built in areas you could go into and everything. But that's what I'm saying. It's all being threatened with being overrun by the violence and the instability. And then, of course, the American reaction to that, the Western reaction to that. So very hard to rebuild a school when people are shooting at you.
Tony Perry of the Los Angeles Times, back last week.
Last week.
From Iraq. Thank you, Tony.
My pleasure.
LA Times photographer Rick Loomis was on that assignment with Tony. You can see his pictures of Tony and the Marines. Indeed, every picture does tell a story here. Go to our website, npr.org.